All right, well, good morning. The court calls United States v. Payne, and counsel for the appellant, please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of this honorable court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Nicholas Carter, and I, along with...
One second. Can you hear in the back all right? Nope. Can you speak a little louder?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
My name is Captain Nicholas Carter, and...
Okay, you're good. Thank you.
I, along with Lieutenant Colonel Patrick Wells, represent the appellant, Staff Sergeant Robert Payne, in this matter. The military judge erred in instructing the members by omitting necessary elements equating the creation of child pornography to sending a nude photo, thus not giving the necessary guidance.
Before you plunge into substance, why isn't this waived?
Your Honor,
you've got a situation where counsel made some vague allusion and said, well, we're not going to tell. And the judge said, okay, what's your problem? Then we're not going to tell. We're not going to say anything because we don't want to help the government. And then when the time came to object, they said nothing. Why isn't this waived?
Your Honor, the appellant did make an objection on the record, and that objection was put in there. And as it states within there, you know, he refers to an 802 conference that had discussions, and the military judge thought it was specific enough to be able to make a ruling based on that objection.
Let's stipulate that if there were waiver, then we would test for plain error, would we?
Yes, Your Honor.
Waiver. If there were forfeiture, we would test for plain error. Excuse me for interrupting.
Would it be plain error to admit an element? Always plain error to admit an element?
Yes, Your Honor. It's plain error to omit an element, and then we test for harmlessness at that point.
Which element was omitted in your view?
Your Honor, there are multiple elements that were omitted in the appellant's view. First off, all the elements for attempt were omitted. What the judge read instead of the elements for attempt were the elements of solicitation. And then further on, in describing what constituted the creation of child pornography, the military judge equated that and said that by requesting that she send new photos of herself to the accused. So
you asked us to grant that issue. We didn't grant that issue.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I guess I don't.
The issue about whether talking about naked children equated to child pornography. You had a separate issue asking us to review that issue, and we declined to grant it. Did we not?
You declined to grant the factual sufficiency. Yes, Your Honor. But you granted whether the instructions of creating child pornography were given adequately. And the appellant states that those instructions were not given adequately.
With respect to the third element of attempt, presumably in your statement you argued that the third element of attempt was not given, the beyond mere preparation, blah, 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 correct?
Yes, sir.
Because you said none of the elements were given, which would include the third one. The government's position is that the words in the instruction saying it was a serious request, I think that's the right phrase, but serious inquiry or whatever, was close enough. Why isn't that close enough?
Well, Your Honor, the way the case law has gone down and fitted it, it's not that if a jury has not been given an element to consider, it is not that we go back through and find out if there's evidence to prove that element. They didn't know about this element. They didn't know that they needed to find that thing. Now, the serious request, that's an element that has been developed statutorily for solicitation and not been developed for an attempt.
What's the theory behind requiring the third element of attempt, something more than mere preparation?
Your Honor, the theory is that it is that he had engaged and started moving down the line to commit the offense.
No, not in this case. In general, why do we have that at all?
To ensure,
what is the object of having that element?
Yes, Your Honor. To ensure that the accused is going along the route to commit the overall offense. And so, therefore, it's not just somebody who's exploring or curious.
But why wouldn't that be true if he took a small step in that direction? That's still on the path toward criminal endeavor?
Well, and it's got to be, as it says, it's got to be more than just a small step. It's got to be a substantial step.
So why do we require that? Why substantial versus small?
Because that way it protects, because what we're looking at is that if somebody begins that road, and unless there's some unknown fact or unplanned instance that comes up and stops them from performing that, crime, we don't punish them for what the overall crime would have been.
Okay.
Has either party, in this case, explored whether the substantial step should or should not be a part of this court's ongoing precedence?
I mean, Your Honor, I apologize. I don't necessarily understand your question.
Well, the last discussion was, what was the purpose of the substantial step? And there are many aspects of that discussion that will be important for us to think about and decide this case. My question is, do we have before us in this case an argument for either party to revisit the requirement in the attempt area that there be a substantial step?
Well, Your Honor, I believe in through this court's case law that the substantial step is required to be there, and we do need to have that substantial step in order to punish somebody for the gravamen of the offense. And so I don't believe that it is brought forward to this court that there doesn't need to be a substantial step for an attempt charge.
Okay, so the next question is, assuming that is retained, what is the practical difference between a substantial step and a serious request? I understood your argument before that one grows out of the solicitation area, but for purposes of people making a decision about whether someone is or is not guilty of an offense, what's the difference between the two for someone who's listening to those instructions and then deciding how to act upon them for purposes of resolving the issue of guilt or innocence in a case?
All right, Your Honor. And as we list out the instructions for the substantial step, similar instructions within our brief on page 14, what is important to remember about that is that there needs to be this overt act that is required that goes beyond preparatory steps, that is direct movement towards the commission of the offense. So that is required, and that's what this court found.
Understand that. What is the difference between a serious request and a substantial step?
And a serious request in dealing with solicitation, that means that they just need to be serious about requesting it, as opposed to taking a step further towards a commission of offense.
Right. But why isn't the making of a serious request within the concept of a substantial step?
And I believe, Your Honor, maybe in certain cases there a serious request could be, but the way that the instructions were given into this case, those were framed in regards to solicitation as opposed to an attempt.
Why was the serious, assuming there was a serious request in this case, why was it not a substantial step in this case? I'm not talking about theory, I'm talking about the actual facts of the case. What would be your view as to why the serious request, assuming the members found a serious request in this case, did not constitute a substantial step?
Because it was not a substantial step in order to complete the commission of the offense under 134, which was using 2251. And what was required is that the minor needed to engage in explicit conduct for the purpose of it being recorded. And so a request of send me a new photo is not a substantial step towards getting a minor to engage in sexually explicit conduct.
But the government didn't charge it as a violation of the federal statute. They charged it as an attempt to commit a violation of Article 134.
Yes, Your Honor, but they used the language from 2251, and then they used the maximum punishment from 2251 in deciding it, and therefore, when they're using these definitions of using the words as child pornography, if those come along with them, legal definitions.
No. I mean, what case are you relying on for the proposition that even though they choose not to charge it as a violation of Clause 3 of Article 134, an attempt to commit that, they're nonetheless bound by all the elements of it?
Well, I mean, you know, Barbary comes to mind, Your Honor, and particularly concerning when we're dealing with the fact of child pornography and the creation of child pornography, it needs to be defined somewhere. And the way that this case has come down, the way that this court has come down on child pornography decisions, they've defined child pornography in United States versus Roderick to include a series of, you know, a series of requirements as to what sexually explicit conduct was.
Let me ask you a question a different way, okay, which is with respect to specification 4 of this charge and with respect to the language that you don't like with respect to the serious inquiry, in your mind, how should the specification have been drafted?
The specification should have been drafted that the accused did a certain act and to which made a serious request for Marley to engage in sexually explicit conduct that act, for the purpose of filming that act to create child pornography. That act was done with a specific intent to produce child pornography, and that the act amounted to more than mere preparation, and that the act apparently tended to affect the commission of the intended offense.
Can you point me to one case charged as a violation of Article 80 where all that language is in there?
No, Your Honor.
Will you please take a naked picture, is that mere preparation in your view?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that it could be considered mere preparation, just taking a picture. I mean,
taking a picture or asking to take a picture?
And maybe if I didn't hear your question correctly, Your Honor, and I apologize, but I mean, in this case, he asked, could you take one? So he's asking, do you have the ability to take a photo? It's, in my view, in the appellate's view, is mere preparation seen if she has the ability to create child pornography.
But if she doesn't have the ability to do what he's asking her to do, that doesn't mean he hasn't taken a substantial step. It means that it was factually impossible for her to comply. Right, because I mean, we're punishing, it's an inchoate offense, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we're punishing people that have not just a guilty mind, right, but do something, take some step to effectuate the purpose of
yes,
a guilty mind, right?
Yes.
And if the person on the other end can't do it either because they're not, in fact, a 14-year-old girl or because they don't have a camera, that doesn't change the fact that he had more than a guilty mind, does it?
No, Your Honor, that doesn't change it. That doesn't change that fact. And as we're looking
at... And that's what we criminalize, right? That's what changed something that's not criminal to something that is criminal.
That's what we criminalize.
So if you wrote in his diary, I'm going to ask Marley to send me nude pictures of herself, you'd agree that that's not a step at all. That's
no,
just a guilty mind.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with you on that. But what's important in this case is that the members were not armed with the appropriate instructions so that they can make those determinations as to whether his mind was guilty for the actual offense of inducing or coercing someone to create child pornography.
So let's assume, just for the sake of argument, that we find that this was waived rather than forfeited, okay, and that we agree with you that there was error with respect to the military judge's instructions, okay? Why is it not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt?
Because it left the members continually confused in regards to that. What we have in this case, Your Honor, is that there's multiple levels of neglected instructions that the members were given. No attempt instructions, there are no instructions stating that Sergeant Payne's inducement solicitation was to engage in sexually explicit conduct.
Doesn't the spec in include a scienter requirement? Doesn't the spec say knowingly and wrongfully? Isn't that enough to impart knowledge?
It's enough to impart knowledge that he knows.
Knowledge of criminality. Those are words of criminality. That's scienter. Isn't that enough?
Well, it's enough to say that there was some criminality, and that he was wrongfully asking certain things. But it doesn't say that it gives him enough knowledge that he was engaging in coercing someone. Your Honor, I see that my time's up. May I finish answering the question? But what it doesn't do, it doesn't give him the knowledge that, and it doesn't show that he was asking for sexually explicit conduct to be done for the purpose of creating the child pornography.
But in order for that argument to prevail, we have to agree with you that they had to allege all the elements of the 2251, right, the federal statutes.
Or that they had to allege enough of it to create the criminality of it, yes, Your Honor.
Do you feel you had a chance to answer Judge Ryan's question about prejudice? You can do the rest on rebuttal if you'd like. But
yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Chief Judge Baker, Senior Judge Efron, judges of the court. May it please the court, I'm Captain Thomas Alford, and along with Colonel Don Christensen, represent the United States in this case. Consistent with the language of Specification 4 of Charge 1, the military judge below properly instructed on each of the necessary elements of attempted enticement of a minor to create child pornography. Moreover, the military judge adequately instructed the members to find the necessary predicate facts of that specification beyond a reasonable doubt. Therefore, the decision of the CCA should be affirmed.
So what is it in your mind that the specification is alleging an attempt? What offense is it alleging an attempt to commit?
Your Honor, it's alleging an attempt to commit Article 134 using the language of Section 2251A, the federal statute. It's incorporated by way of Clause 1 and 2, not Clause 3, so the interstate commerce element's not required. But it adopted the language of 2251A. And, Your Honor, you can also see that in the specification itself. If you look at the specification, it uses that exact language, persuade, induce, entice, in the language of the specification. And that language is directed at creating child pornography by requesting a nude photograph.
Is a nude photograph child pornography, per se?
Your Honor, it's not per se. It may be necessary, but it's not sufficient. So,
is it sexually explicit conduct?
Sexually explicit conduct would be sufficient to constitute child pornography. And if you look at the military judge's instructions, she does that very thing. She instructs on sexually explicit conduct, what a lascivious exhibition is, the dose factors. So she goes through that entire route. But she says that the request of child pornography, that is a specific intent element, that he had to have intended to get child pornography, the substantial step was that request for a nude photograph. And you may wonder, why is it she's referring to a nude photograph, Your Honor? And if you go through it, if you look at the record, Prosecution Exhibit 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, constantly the appellant is referring to nude photographs. Unfortunately,
but I mean, is a nude photograph, I mean, where is sexually explicit conduct defined?
In the instructions, Your Honor?
No, you're referring to 2251. So where is sexually explicit conduct for purposes of 2251? Where is it defined?
Sexually explicit conduct, Your Honor, I believe is defined within Title 18. I can't tell you right now exactly what the statute is, but it is defined, and the military judge did use that definition in her instructions.
Use those words, substantial step, that you used right now?
Your Honor, she did in Specification 2 and 3, and I can't speak for why she didn't use it in Specification 4, other than to say that she limited the substantial step in this particular case to one very specific substantial step. That is, by requesting a nude photograph, that was...
What is the theory behind the substantial step? Why do you have the third element on attempt?
Your Honor, I think
put it in plain English.
Yes, sir. I think the main reason is that you don't want to make an offense a thought crime. And this court discussed
What's that. A thought crime?
A thought crime would just be, you know, if he was fantasizing about something. But here you actually have the complete...
Can you fantasize in internet writing?
I think you could, Your Honor.
Okay.
But here, the important thing is that the reason why it was charged as an attempt is this is not a traditional attempt. This was a completed offense. Had he been a civilian and doing this very same thing in interstate commerce, he would have completed the offense had it been a 14-year-old girl on the other end.
So as I understand your argument, it would be, members, if you find that the request here constituted a substantial step, then you can find guilt in this case.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But the judge didn't say that. So the judge used substantial step, as you mentioned, with respect to other offenses in this case. Let's assume that the serious request in this case did constitute a substantial step, at least for purposes of affirming guilt based on a evidentiary challenge. But as to an instructional matter, why would we have confidence in light of the judge instructing as to two offenses that a substantial request is required, that when the members got to the third offense in which the word substantial step was not used, that the members could return a finding of guilty even if they did not conclude that it constituted a substantial step?
Your Honor, I disagree that she didn't say that they didn't have to find a substantial step beyond a reasonable doubt, because in the first element of the instructions, when she says element 1, 2, and 3, in the first element, although she doesn't parse it out individually, she says that you have to find that he had the specific intent to request child pornography by requesting a nude photograph. So that was an element that they did have to find.
That wasn't my question. My question was, if you have two offenses in which the members are required to find a substantial step by the judge expressly, and you have one offense in which the judge does not use the term substantial step, what would give us confidence that the members nonetheless found there was a substantial step, even though having heard that instruction with respect to two offenses and not the other? That is, why couldn't they conclude, well, the judge, why couldn't they have this conversation in the room? Of course, we don't know what happened in the room. Well, the judge didn't tell us we need to find a substantial step here. The judge told us that we have to find it in those other two offenses. Therefore, we can find guilt without reaching a conclusion on substantial step.
What I would say to that, Your Honor, is that the completed offense, Section 2251A, is subsumed within the elements. So they had to have found that the offense was completed but for the fact that what he thought was a 14-year-old girl was actually a sheriff's deputy. So there's a legal impossibility there, but they still had to find that the offense was completed. And the offense was completed except for that the person on the other end, which the appellant had no idea about, was a sheriff's deputy. So, and I don't mean to belabor the point, but going back to this was the specific substantial step. The substantial step was that the crime was completed. But what else could he have done? I guess sent her a camera to take a picture of herself or something like that would be another substantial step. But he completed every single act. He contacted her. He discussed sexually explicit things with Marley, and then he went and he committed the crime of enticement. As soon as he said, "Will you send me a picture, a nude picture?" And I know this isn't a legal sufficiency challenge, but I would encourage the court to look through the prosecution exhibits, which start on the joint appendix on page 380, where he says, "I'd like some nude pics. Can you take some?" So can you take some nude pictures? He goes on, "I can't wait to see your young, hot body. Can I video us having sex?"
Counsel, what does that have to do with whether or not the military judge adequately instructed on the elements?
Well, I think it's important, Your Honor, because when you instruct on the law as you know, you have to consider the facts as they've come out in the case. And so the reason why she used nude photograph, and that was considered a substantial step, was because in the context of these conversations, he was referring to a nude photograph, but when he was saying nude photograph, he wanted child pornography. Okay. That's what he was saying.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Is mere nudity child pornography?
Mere nudity is not, Your Honor.
Okay. Did the judge instruct that nudity wasn't enough and what he was soliciting was child pornography? That's an element of the offense, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor. And
okay.
She did
and you keep talking about nudity, and that's what the judge evidently kept talking about. So, you know, where's the beef here? Where's the child pornography here? I mean, he could solicit a nude photo, and he would be soliciting something, but it wouldn't necessarily be child pornography. Now we're getting over into legal sufficiency, but you went there, so.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would just first like to say that the specification itself did contain the words nude photo, and as you pointed out, there was no, this isn't a legal sufficiency challenge, there was no challenge at the trial level that it failed to state an offense. But that being said, you're correct that a nude photograph is not sufficient.
Okay, now what's the sufficiency of the instruction if all she talked about was nude photos?
Well, Your Honor, I would point you to the joint appendix on page 285. The military judge instructed the members on specific intent as follows. Unless you are satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt that appellant specifically intended that Marley produce a visual depiction of a minor engaged in sexually explicit conduct, as I have defined that term to you, you may not convict beyond a reasonable doubt. And then she went on to discuss that a nude photograph isn't sufficient, that it had to have been sexually explicit conduct, et cetera, the dose factors. So she didn't say that it was just a nude photo, Your Honor.
Counsel, let's assume for the sake of argument that while we agree with you that the facts are factually sufficient to constitute, right, to be legally sufficient to support the substantial step element of an attempt.
Yes, Your Honor.
But we disagree with you that the judge's instructions explain that element of this inchoate offense.
Your Honor.
So we agree legally factually sufficient. We disagree that the instructions were adequate or correct. Explain under what legal theory we review whether or not it is harmless beyond reasonable doubt and why it is or is not.
Yes, Your Honor. Because of the constitutional implications at play, I believe this court looks at the language I think this court uses as a substantial error in instructions, you would review it for harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt. If you do use that standard, and that's despite, and let me be clear.
I'm not asking you to agree with me that there's error. I'm saying assume for the sake of answering my question that we think that one of the elements was not properly instructed upon, that it wasn't instructed upon at all.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, first off, the defense objection, he objected generally to all four specifications under charge one. The government would propose that that was not a sufficient objection to raise this issue and preserve it. That being said, this court has said that if the military judge doesn't properly define something with enough specificity and there's no objection, that's a plain error analysis. However, if there is a constitutional implication at play, that is, if substantial step is something required to be instructed on and the military judge erred, then at that point, then it'd be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And then you can look to the things that I mentioned before, the chats, the fact that he had several phone conversations with her.
No, but lay out the test, not the facts that equal the test, but what the test is.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it was in...
The appellant might disagree with you, right? So let's make clear what it is that's on the table in terms of what you look at.
Yes, Your Honor. The test is, even if something is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, if you're going to use that standard, the question becomes, is it clear beyond a reasonable doubt that a rational jury could have found a defendant guilty absent the error? And that's from the Supreme Court case, Nieder against the United States, 727 U.S. 1. And going back to the facts then, looking at the facts, you have several different chats. You have the fact that he spoke with this so-called Marley over the telephone. He actually got in his car. He drove to New York to meet her, to have sex, which he repeatedly talked about and said he wanted to videotape her having sex with him. And so that all together, and also the fact that defense counsel never specifically objected, and he played a game, a bit of hide the ball, because he, when asked by the military judge, well, what specifically are you objecting to? And he said, well, we don't want to perfect the instructions or the specifications for the government. So in light of that also, this court should find beyond a reasonable doubt that the members still would have found him guilty of this particular offense.
Would you agree that Payne was not charged with solicitation in the specification?
I would, Your Honor, even though
Let me follow up on that. What do you do then with the statement that the military judge made right before she gave the instructions, where she said Payne is charged with the offense of soliciting a minor to create child pornography? Then she went on to basically give the desk book instructions on solicitation, but inserted the word attempt in front of it. Based on that, the government is making the argument that we can extrapolate from those instructions the elements of attempt. And I understand your argument there, but essentially, she told him he was charged with solicitation. She instructed on solicitation, attempted solicitation, which is not, the attempted solicitation was not in the specification. And they came back and found him guilty of attempt. Now, how do you reconcile that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that, again, I don't know what was going through the military judge's head, but I think it's fair to assume that she did use the bench book instruction for solicitation as a guidepost for how she actually instructs on that, because 2251 is not included in the bench book, but it is somewhat similar to a solicitation.
And that brings up another thing. Where do we get 2251 here? I mean, certainly the specification doesn't mention 2251. 134 Clause 3 is not referenced in any manner. In your brief on page 13, you specifically state that this was a complicated case because it involved the charging of a federal offense under Article 134. And yet, when you read the specification, you would not get that impression.
Well, Your Honor, it does use that language. It uses the language that is very similar to the language of 2251. And then in sentencing, in the maximum punishment inquiry, you had the trial counsel mention that statute by name, and the defense counsel accepted that. In the closing argument of the trial counsel referred to it as an attempted enticement two different times. But going to your question of whether she actually instructed on solicitation, if you look at the instructions, again, it appears that she used solicitation as a guidepost and then mistakenly said solicitation was the offense. But this court held in U.S. v. Shell that solicitation can be synonymous with enticement. Different theories of criminal liability, to be sure, but the military judge did then go on to instruct using the language of 2251A.
We also said in Shell that you needed to instruct on a substantial step.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think in going back to Senior Judge Efron's question about whether the instructions were sufficient in that regard, the completed offense was instructed on. The only thing that made this an attempt that would require a substantial step was the fact that Marley was a sheriff's deputy from New York. And that substantial step was limited to one specific substantial step.
Unless you take the view that requesting a new photo isn't necessarily requesting child porn. Would you agree that there might be a difference there in intent? Are you arguing that any request for a nude photo necessarily equals a request for child porn?
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. And I'd go back to the military judge instructing, unless you're satisfied that he specifically intended that she produce a visual depiction of a minor engaged in sexually explicit conduct, you may not convict on this offense. So while she did say nude photo, to tie that back to the facts, she then went on, almost immediately after, if you look at the instructions, and said actually three different times, you have to find that he had the specific intent that she create child pornography,
Do I understand you're essentially arguing that any time someone asks for a nude photo, they're necessarily committing a substantial step toward asking the creation of child porn?
No, Your Honor. No, that's not what we're saying. But given the facts of this case, and given the fact that the specification actually alleges that and uses that language, and we're not here on a legal sufficiency challenge, The judge merely mirrored her instructions to the specifications. There, appellants cannot point to anything that, that really deviates from the language of the specification itself.
Isn't there a maximum sentence problem here? The judge instructed on 22, you're saying the judge, first you're saying the judge, you're supposed to intimate through the words of the spec that 2251's lurking back there somewhere. But then the judge plows into 2251 and she says, well, the maximum period for 22, that maximum confined for 2251 is 15. But the manual says that the max for solicitation for an offense is the underlying offense, but it can't exceed 5. So don't we have an instruction problem here on maximum punishment?
Well, Your Honor, I don't want to speak to something I'm not 100% knowledgeable about in this regard, and if the court would oblige me, I could brief on that issue, but I can't speak to that specific issue.
Go ahead.
Counsel, a question on remedy, and the court may well affirm, and I'm not asking you to concede here, but if the court does reverse, what's the remedy in this situation?
Your Honor, I believe it goes back to the Judge Advocate General, and then the Judge Advocate General would then send it to the convening authority for a sentencing rehearing.
Is there any reason in this case why it couldn't be sent to the Court of Criminal Appeals for them to consider whether rehearing or reassessment is appropriate?
No, Your Honor. No, that also could be an option.
Counsel, do you see an inconsistency between this Court's decision in Mance and the Supreme Court's decision in Nieder? As to when you consider harmlessness in regard to instructing or not instructing on elements?
Your Honor, I see that my time is up. May I answer your question?
You may.
Thank you. No, Your Honor, I believe Mance stands for the proposition that if a element is omitted, it is per se prejudicial.
But doesn't Nieder say it's not always? It's not necessarily?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that Nieder specifically focuses on if it's a substantial error. Now, if the courts haven't been 100% clear on that, so I can't speak that they're inconsistent. I know that Mance is an older case.
An instruction that omits an element of the offense does not necessarily render a criminal trial fundamentally unfair or unreliable. That's Nieder.
Yes, Your Honor.
And Mance seems to say if you omit an element, it's per se prejudicial.
In the Court of Appeals...
You may not read them that way, which is your prerogative. But I think that's what Judge Erdman's getting at.
You'd agree if Nieder says what it says and Mance says the opposite, that they're not consistent, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, and I think that the Court of Appeals could, you know, they could be giving an appellant more rights. That is, they could be granting more rights.
Is there a military reason why that's the correct outcome? Is there a code reason?
None that I can think of off the top of my head right now, Judge.
Well, in light of the United States against New. Why wouldn't any court under the UCMJ apply Nieder?
Again, Your Honor, I can't speculate at this exact moment. All I can say is that I can see that the CMA or this court could say that you have more rights in that regard and that we're going to grant you, if there is an instruction missing, then it is per se prejudicial, contra the Supreme Court.
Yeah, my question is, while Nieder didn't necessarily precisely resolve that, isn't the whole dialogue between the majority and the dissent, separate opinion in that case, one of recognizing that Nieder applies in the military justice system?
Your Honor, I don't know. I don't know.
Could you please say whether or not that was a question?
that was a question, Your Honor.
That was a question.
And, Your Honor, if I could briefly conclude.
Yeah, please.
Thank you. Because the military judge properly instructed the elements of the attempted Article 134 offense, adopting the language of Section 2251A, and even if the military judge erred by not instructing with enough specificity, the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Therefore, this court should not jettison the findings of and affirm the decision of the CCA. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, for the appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. A
little louder, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. To touch on a couple points that that Appellee's counsel stated. He stated that if he had been a civilian, he would have been convicted of this, and that's not necessarily true. What was instructed in this case was that he requested her to send him a new photo. The Boxmeyer decision, which is cited within our brief, makes it clear sending and creating are covered under two different codes, and he would not have been guilty of creating child pornography by asking somebody to send to him.
Are you going to address the Nieder-Mance question?
Yes, Your Honor, I can address the Nieder-Mance question. And what Nieder, and I guess the way that I have read Nieder was that potentially omitting a single element may not necessarily result in a fundamentally unfair trial. But in this case, what happened was the judge instructed on solicitation, did not instruct on attempt. And in regards, within the solicitation, she did not properly instruct the members as to creating child pornography. Instead, she said, send a new photo. And because of that, that left the account with a fundamentally unfair trial. And as we look at that, that's when I think we deal with the Mance. That is per se prejudicial because I think it can be read.
Are you saying it's structural?
I believe in this case, yes, Your Honor, it can be structural. And the reason is because he was charged with an attempt and he was read the instructions of a solicitation that did not fully define what the underlying offense was.
Is there any case that you can point to that stands for the proposition that since Nieder, a omission of an element is a structural error?
Not since Nieder, Your Honor.
And is there any case you can point to? My understanding of your argument is that you're not arguing that Nieder doesn't apply in the military justice system, rather you're applying it?
Well, I mean, I'm not arguing that it automatically applies. I would agree with, you know, Appellee's counsel that the military justice system does give some further protections to military members, but I think you can read Nieder in conjunction with Mance, and even though Mance used the term of omitting a specific element, what Nieder got down to the specifics was, did it result in a fundamentally unfair trial?
Counsel, if we were to assume that there was errors here, and I agree with your theory as to the error, why wouldn't it be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, since at trial, Payne's theory was entrapment, and he did not contest his actions?
Because the members were not given the proper guidepost to ensure that what Sergeant Payne did violated the specifications that he was charged with committing.
But don't we take into consideration that he didn't contest the specifications that he was charged with? He argued that this was improper enticement, the actions of the government were improper, and didn't really address the specific elements.
Well, he didn't address the fact that, and you're correct, Your Honor, to the point that it wasn't addressed, the specific elements of this, though he did not address whether or not he asked for her to send new photos. The problem is the jury still needs to find, beyond a reasonable doubt, that that request to send new photos was enticing somebody to engage in sexually explicit conduct for the purpose of producing child pornography.
Counsel, there's a couple problems, which is, one, you don't disagree that the specification gives your client notice of what the government's theory of criminal liability was. Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. And so when you look at harmless beyond a reasonable doubt in the Nieder context, instructional error, okay, in this context, don't we also look not just at whether they contested the elements, but whether the actual evidence of the element that you feel was omitted from the instructions was overwhelming? Right.
That could be taking a look at it, but we also look, Your Honor, as well as it, could the members have been confused in regards to this, in regards to the specifications? And in this case, there's no evidence of him enticing her to engage in sexually explicit conduct for the purpose of producing it.
Well, the government has argued that she laid out all the elements, she mouthed the magic words, sexually explicit conduct, she defined it, she used the DOS factors. What more do you need?
Well, what she also did, though, was say that...
What did she not do that she had to do?
She had to, when she described it, it looked like I'm almost out of time, Your Honor, may I?
Go on.
What she had to do was to describe and specifically state how the DOS factors relate to the intent of what and that it was created. As you see from the specification, what she did was equated sending to create and nude to child pornography. And she did not put those two...
Well, the government argues that she did not equate nude to child pornography, that she said the magic words, and that that's enough. What did she not do with regard to that issue that she should have done?
Well, the judge needed to specifically tell the members that they needed to find beyond a reasonable doubt that the accused enticed her to engage in sexually explicit conduct for the purposes of creating something new, child pornography, and not simply just sending a nude photo.
With respect to the instructions that she gave, you don't disagree that what she instructed on is covered in the specification and that could be an offense under Article 134, irrespective of whether it is a proper 2251 offense?
That could potentially be an offense under 134, Your Honor.
And that's what was charged, right? An attempt to commit a violation of Article 134?
Yes, it was, but the instructions didn't cover an attempt to do that. The instructions covered a solicitation to engage.
Do you agree with a statement that if the evidence is overwhelming as to the elements, it can be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt to omit an element?
No, Your Honor. I don't necessarily agree with the overall.
You have to pick one. You do agree or you don't agree. You can't. Why don't you agree?
Well, in first case, Your Honor, I don't think the evidence is overwhelming in this case, regardless.
You're not allowed to escape the hatch that way.
Yes, Your Honor.
That the evidence is overwhelming in a case, if one had a case where the evidence was overwhelming and an element is omitted, why does that or does that not equal a fundamentally unfair trial, et cetera?
And I would agree, Your Honor, that if an element is omitted, that relates to a fundamentally unfair trial. And so regardless of what the, because it's not necessarily for this court to find out what the members would have done if the members were not given the opportunity to be instructed on those elements.
So the unfair part is that the members didn't do it, not that they wouldn't have done it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that fair?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just a question on remedy. If, and the court may affirm, as you noted, if the court does not, what's the remedy? Do you agree with the government's answer to my second question, that it could be returned to the Judge Advocate General for referral to the CCA for an assertion whether there should be reassessment or rehearing?
Pending further guidance from this court, yes, Your Honor, it could either be sent back to the TJAG for a rehearing or it could be sent back to the CCA to determine if whether they think a sentence rehearing is appropriate.
Okay, the court thanks both counsel. The case is now submitted and will stand in recess until 10:30. Thank you.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 10:30 a.m.